Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today, we will have a quick intro. We'll talk about some 2.0, including a spoiler. And then we're going to talk about the hopefully upcoming FAQ for Gen Con. And then finally, we'll have some closing comments.
This, John, is episode 21. It should have been episode 22, but we suck.
We do. We were a little busy, but you were the most busy because you're fantastic, Alex.
I was the most busy. In fact, I've been ridiculously busy this week as well. I have been in four different cities, not counting airports and transitions, over the last week at two different conferences and a regional and anyway, other things as well. But we're still getting an episode to you guys because you're that important to us and because missing two in a row would be just unforgivable.
And it's Father's Day, and we're making this commitment to our listeners.
That's right, wow. It's Father's Day. Yeah. So it is.
Wow. And you're a father, and I'm a quadruple father.
You're a quadruple father. Is that better than a father? Or?
No, it's about the same. It just sounds better, yeah.
So because we've been away for 2 weeks, we actually have a bunch of news that I want to go over. The very, very first I want to talk about is that I've gotten two or three emails or comments from brand new listeners again, which is fantastic. I love hearing from you guys. But the recurring theme seems to be about the jargon in the cast and which segments are harder and whether we can do a sort of lexicon episode about some of the terminology. I did point these people and hopefully any other new listeners. We did do episode 35 where we spent a lot of time on some of the basic terminology of Thrones. So if you want to check that out, it's kind of hard because we can't do it every couple of months. It's just there's no point. I think we'll definitely revisit that when Thrones 2.0 comes out. When we do, you know, the first couple of weeks of that, we'll try and bring that lexicon back down and reintroduce these terms. But, you know, we should probably have it written down somewhere, like a guide, to the stuff we say.
It's awesome you mentioned that, Alex, because someone reached out to me on Skype as well that's a new listener, and they were telling me how they were loving the amount of 2.0 content we've been doing because they're trying to prep themselves to play. They're a Netrunner player, and they're hoping to come over to AGOT when the new release happens. So
that's good. It's great to have new listeners, and it feels really nice to have you guys reach out to us, even if it's just to say, hey, I'm a new listener. You know, these parts of your cast suck, but I'm still listening, so you can't be that bad. That's good enough for us. news. I've got so much. I don't know. Do you want to start off so that I don't monopolize the next 10 minutes?
1 billion regionals happened.
That's the real reason we didn't record an episode last week. I didn't want the closing segment to be 8 minutes of me reading out regional locations.
Stark won a lot.
I mean, it's 2 weeks of regionals. I don't have data for all of them, but I'll do the lightning list, maybe, and you can fill it up.
Oh, it better be really fast. Go.
All right. Poland, Stark HOD, Mira. Austria, Stark NA, Mira. Canada, Lannister Power Behind the Throne, Fear of Winter.
Go Salim.
Standish, Maine. Stark No Agenda, the Fitch that isn't the Fitch that wins.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
Madrid, Tarkin playing a Targ, Knights of the Hollow Hill, Fear of Winter. The deck list is posted. Check it out. That's pretty neat. Manchester Regional was JC Wama playing a Stark No Agenda Mira. The Stockton-on-Tees in the UK Regional was Greyjoy Boats versus Lanny Alufin Apart in the final. I don't know who actually won that.
Ooh.
Spain and Barcelona, there was a Greyjoy Maester's Path. In Australia and Brisbane, there was a Greyjoy the Old Way Longship Maiden's Bane. That deck list is also posted. And in Palm Bay, Florida, Stark Darkwings, Darkhorns, Mira by Tyler Thompson. The very last one I have, I know, again, it's Tacoma, Washington. Martell No Agenda versus Martell Alufin Apart, but I don't know who actually won that. That's just the ones I have. There's like 12 I don't have the information for. That's insane.
Yeah.
Do you happen to have the information for Finland,
I have nothing
Greece?
Else.
Other news, I noticed that the Castle Stalik registration is already full. You can still go to Stalik, but you'll be staying in a hotel room, not in the in the castle itself. And we're months and months away. This is going to be their biggest Stalik ever.
Yep. Sounds like it's going to be fun.
That's all I get out of you. Yeah, that's going to be fun.
That's all you get.
Obviously, I know a lot of our listeners listen to the HBO show or watch the HBO show. I wasn't going to mention any small details about it, but there's a comment from one of our listeners, well, occasional listeners and regular world champion John Bruno, that I absolutely loved and thought I would share with our listeners, and it was the line, "Shireen just became a character agenda."
That is great.
World's registration. Now, this is less relevant for me, less relevant for you, because you're not going this year.
But, this is true.
Did you see all the news and follow some of that?
Yeah, I saw that a whole bunch of it was selling out. 2.0 is sold out, right?
2.0, I believe, as a side event is sold out. They posted the side event schedule officially. They also opened up registration, and a day before that, they posted this like world registration for dummies. It was step-by-step, image-by-image, like this is what you click on. And I laughed it off until I realized that I called it World Registrations for Dummies and there was a picture of me in it. Not so great. K-Tom later pointed out that I was laughing in it, maybe at the absurdity of the whole thing, because apparently you really did need to follow that guide. It was complicated. You had to enter your address every time you picked up an additional ticket. You were getting confirmation emails for the wrong things. It was a nightmare. I didn't do it. We'd love to hear your horror stories, those of you who did. But I've been told that almost everything is sold out. I don't know about the Joust and the Melee for 1.0 yet.
But if you haven't signed up, sign up now.
Yeah, you got to sign up now. The only tickets that will show up now are going to be the few for world champions that didn't pick them up, or regional and national champions, as those go on sale a little bit later. Which is crazy and good and crazy, but mostly crazy.
Mostly crazy, I agree.
Aside from that, I don't have all that much. There's a ton of 2.0 news, but we've broken that down into a separate segment, partly to help with the lexicon issues, partly to sort of sequester it. So we'll generally be trying to do that, even if it's a news article related to 2.0. We won't put in this intro news segment until 2.0 is released. We're joined today by, I refuse to call him Little C. This is Seth.
That's his name.
DC.
Don't refuse anything. His name is Little C.
And we're going to start off with talking about 2.0. Over the last 2 weeks, there's been a ton of news, but one that might have slipped by most people.
We invited a guest on. We have to introduce him properly. Don't be like, I refuse to call him Little C. So Little C is a major Thrones player. He's won the DC Regional. He's won Red Saturday. He's top 16 at major events. And we're very privileged to have him here on the show.
And John here has already started his next Melee tournament, trying to butter me up.
We'll see you at the final table there, Little C.
He never stops playing Melee. It's good to be on.
John never stops playing Melee. You're right. So, yeah, where was I? I was saying that the one piece of 2.0 news that most people might not have known is if you signed up for the Gen Con tournament, you got an email about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, in your spam.
In my case, in my spam box, and a lot of other people as well, that was telling you where you were going to pick up your box. So essentially, rather than give you your box as you sign up, like it initially said, you now have to go to the dealer hall and essentially buy it then, except that your ticket is already paid for the cost. You have to do it while the dealer hall is open, which is on the 2 days before. And after that, they'll sell off the boxes. It seems really, really awkward.
Yeah, it sounds really bad to me because I'm in Melee and Joust those days, which start before the dealer hall opens. I paid for that box, right? That's why my ticket was $55 or whatever.
I really suspect that they will change this. I think they are taking this release very seriously. They don't want any hiccups. I would be surprised if there's not something going on behind the scenes. Someone's finding out that this is a bad idea and there could be a change, much like what you were saying, Alex, where they give it to you at the tournament. That wouldn't surprise me.
And the other thing is if they do hold on to them, bring them to the 2.0 sign up, because people haven't even necessarily read this email, but then some people don't show up, then sure, they can take those back to the booth and sell them. That's fine. That's after the tournament has started. Then I don't worry about it. But yeah, they have to keep them until the tournament. They can't sell them on Saturday.
While we're discussing this tournament, isn't it, this is just you get one core set, right? And you have a little while to build your deck with your one core set and then you play. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I've heard actually that Card Game or AGOT Cards will actually have the 2.0 set up before Gen Con, so you'll be able to build your deck prior to the tournament.
CardGameDB, really cool. Actually. Yeah, they said
that. Yeah, CardGameDB, sorry.
They actually posted, so this was Pipes, Evan Johnson. He posted and said, we wanted to let you guys know there will be a 2.0 deck builder functional before the game releases. Now, that won't help all the brand new players who are coming into this for the first time, but maybe the deck building rules will be really simple as well, like just mash two factions together. I don't know.
It also, with just one core set, you know, there was a response after they said it's just going to be a couple of rounds of tournament. A lot of people said, we want more rounds, we want a cut, we want a real champion. And then a couple other people came on and said, well, on the forums, they said, well, I don't know how many games do we want to play with these one core set decks. But I'm sure it will be a lot of fun to see all the new stuff and try it out for the first time.
Now, yeah, they have pushed for I think they extended it to 7 rounds now to get, you know, what would look like a cut. They're not going to do the cut, though, because of the increase in size of the tournament. And then apparently 2C1C will actually be hosting a cut in the same area, an unofficial cut to try and determine a champion. I'm fine with all that. I thought also 4 or 5 rounds of Swiss and just playing with the cards for the first time sounded fine to me as well. So, I mean, I'm not particularly worried about it either way. So I guess, again, it's been 2 weeks. There's been a ton of stuff. Maybe start with the strangest one as well. They already announced the first chapter pack.
Yeah, I saw that. There's a lot of discussion about it on both websites. It's cool that they are demonstrating they're really committed to get the card pool up. They're going to have it at Worlds, so this is good news.
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised that they're willing to do that before they'd announced all the factions, because it certainly means that they can't tell us anything about the Bera or the Targ cards or the Martell ones in detail, because they haven't sort of introduced the factions yet. So from a marketing standpoint, that's a little tricky.
Yeah, it is, but I think it's good because there was an issue with Conquest last year where they released it at Gen Con, and then Worlds came, and they hadn't had a single chapter pack out. So it was like, you know, where had the meta really gone? People have been on forums for months already pouring over the few decks that were available, and they're really demonstrating we're going to make sure we keep the meta updated and lively after Gen Con.
Now, I know if John hadn't just stepped out, he'd make fun of me for this, but I actually really, really like the fact that they made Will the first character, the number one in the first cycle that's based on the first book. That first prologue in the first book, the main character is Will. No gameplay implications whatsoever. Doesn't matter at all. But that's the kind of nod where I'm like, oh, well done. Well done.
I feel like this is Game of Thrones. Some money might have changed hands. Nate French might have an envelope full of dollar bills somewhere in his pocket. I don't know. But I know that Will from 2C1C was on AGOT cards. He was pleased to see that.
Don't want to go into individual cards by the whole thing, but I think one thing that a lot of people might not have noticed is that some of the cards spoiled were not from the first chapter pack. So, for instance, the chapter pack is called Taking the Black, but the big plot for the Watch that we get to see is not till the third chapter pack. I think I didn't see if it was 47 or 67.
Yeah, I guess they're spoiling the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, the cards later on are from the chapter pack, but that first set of spoilers is from the cycle.
Got it.
Yeah. And I think the main speculation is this Vengeance for Aaliyah card is another Red Vengeance, a 2-gold Red Vengeance, which, yeah, that sounds kind of neat.
It's cool also to see a commitment to bringing back some of the really iconic cards of first edition. Something like Red Vengeance really helped define Martell as a house, and it's cool to see that they're committed to having a nod towards what they've done before.
Well, I just think it's awesome that they're starting so quickly, that they're going to try to get that card pool that, I should say, the minimum amount to make the card pool interesting done as soon as possible. So I can see, you know, the core set coming out, and then the next month, the first chapter pack, and hopefully a box set expansion shortly after.
I think the key is that they're really demonstrating professionalism in creating a system where they're releasing more cards quickly and they stick to it. They're really trying to step up FFG is and play with the big boys of card games. And if they want to do that, they need to demonstrate that they're a really professional company. They'll be on schedule. There won't be product issues. You know, this could be their biggest game. And I think they realize they need to be very organized in how they release cards.
Let's be honest, they are playing with the big boys. They're the second largest card distributor in the world.
Yeah, but none of their individual games are bigger than, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, Magic.
Right.
Those are all bigger games. If they want to get a game up on that level, they need a player base that feels like this is a smooth, competitive game.
Yeah, Seth's right. They don't have a game that's in those top 10 distributed games, but they distribute more cards because they have so many more games than these other big names. Yeah. They made $61 million last year. Their sales have grown 30% every single year for the last 5 years.
Good. That's good. We want to be playing a game from a company that will be around and continue to support the game. So it's, yep. The state of the union is strong.
So speaking of ton of money, I guess that's the perfect lead into the Lannister article that we saw 2 weeks ago. The Lords of Casterly Rock, the introduction to that faction. What jumped out at you guys from that?
Ambush. Like Lannister is the ambush group now. That's kind of a little bit different from what we're used to. It's kind of cool. It makes a lot more sense because they were always the group that we talked about, these intrigues and these backstabbing and all the gold. So it's interesting to see that they're so focused on ambush.
I think it's a good way of freshening up the houses to mix things up like that. Like we just talked about, so there may be a return of a Red Vengeance card, but you don't want to just recreate the same houses with all the same themes and all similar cards. Now if they give Lannister ambush-type effects, you can have a different – think of how you can make a Jaime or a Cersei that's totally different. You can still have similar cards, but they've really given themselves a lot of design space by switching things up if that's the case.
You know, speaking of Jaime, they spoiled a new Jaime.
We spoiled
a new Jaime, and he was awesome. Really incorporates all the best aspects of Jaime in my mind from the books.
You know? Does he draw cards?
He doesn't draw cards.
But he's the best swordsman in the Bros, and it really shows in that character. So that was cool. It's very Ned-ly.
He's awesome.
Come on.
For me, the Stark. I mean, I would say that the 6-cost slot Rob was probably better, but the Stark article was talking about Nedley, and I think they nailed it for that faction. I think for Lannister, I'm not sure if ambush is the perfect fit thematically, but mechanically, it seems really nice. Ambush is now
clan bins are kind of ambushy.
Yeah, I mean, we can make allowances for it, but mechanically, that's where I think it hit the sweet spot. They have Tyrion, he generates gold, and then you can use the clansmen and ambush them. You know, you can use these events. There's that event that costs X that allows you to bounce characters, things I do for love. You know, all these things of generating gold and then having ways to spend it in the challenges phase. Top it off with the Queen's Assassin, which of all the cards that were spoiled is my favorite by far, because I think it does this great job of leveraging an intrigue advantage into board position. I think that this is mechanically tighter than Stark was.
One interesting point is I tended to notice that with newer players, Lannister in first edition was the house that they first fell in love with for a lot of newer players. And I think that was because they have a lot of the fundamental strong elements. They have draw, they have spot character control with the Neil, very easy to understand and use. And so players were like, man, I can draw extra cards and I'm controlling their best characters. This is great. I wonder if maybe Lannister won't be the immediate favorite like it was, like with a lot of new players he is in first edition. I'm curious to see what kind of takes that spot.
I think I'm hoping Stark will, because that's what the HBO has been pushing so hard. So, you know, all these new players that are coming into this game for 2.0 that haven't played in previous or read the books are probably going to love the Stark. They seem to be more friendly, I'm going to say, to new players because they're not as complicated to ambush. You know, timing that right, dropping that can be more complicated than just killing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Ambushes, you know, you're paying a price to have a pinpoint precision in what you want to do in the challenges phase. And it's really, like, as we see with Targ right now, their ambush really plays well in the hands of experts.
Point worth noting about ambush is that from the text on spoiled card, on burned men and so on, it looks like it's only in the challenges phase. Which, given that it costs gold, isn't that much of a distinction, because you're probably never going to be able to pre-plot ambush a character or stuff like that, like you could before. But it's still an important distinction. I think it constrains ambush to a challenge mechanic, to jump characters in to participate in the fight, not to manipulate the board state at other times.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good thing. I mean, one of the reasons they need to make 2.0 is to tighten up the rules, and when you can ambush things in alternate phases, you open up, you know, this space where you can have unintended effects with cards. It's just a little harder to design things. So I think it's safer from a mechanical standpoint.
That said, I've been praising this house and so on. I still think that Tywin doesn't look very good, that Cersei doesn't look very good from an art perspective, and I don't like the art on Casterly Rock either.
I thought Cersei looked pretty good in the last show, though. I don't know. Oh, the card. Wait, sorry. Excuse me.
You know what I like the art on, Alex?
What do you like?
Our spoiler for this week.
Our spoiler for this week. Okay, that's a reasonable transition. I like that. We'll go with that.
Not at all forced. Yeah, go ahead.
So the card we have is Samuel Tarly. He's a 2 gold character with only an intrigue icon and 1 strength. He's obviously unique and loyal. He's a steward, and he has the keyword insight and the reminder text that that is after you win a challenge in which this character is participating, you may draw a card. He has the flavor text, the world was full of cravens who pretended to be heroes. It took a queer sort of courage to admit to a cowardice, as Samuel Tarly had. And he increases your reserve value by 1. He has a reserve bonus.
Oh, sweet. So not only does he allow you to draw cards if you can actually win a challenge, but you get increased reserve so you can hold those cards in your hand. Sweet.
I think there's a lot to say about this, because we've already seen in the Night's Watch spoiler cards that interact with reserve value. We saw the Watch Has Need, which was dig through the top X cards of your deck, and that's your reserve value.
Yep.
So it seems, and then we've seen the Old Forest Ranger where you can discard cards for gold, and the Messenger Raven that comes back into your hand and draws you a card just before you check for reserve. It looks like reserve is going to be a sort of sub theme in Night's Watch, and that wasn't mentioned in the article.
It's going to be very interesting. Does that open up, you know, who are you, if you use the agenda to sort of ally with another house, if you can get extra draw somewhere else, and then you can play with reserve values, there's going to be a lot of wiggle room to make a pretty potent card advantage package.
Well, see, that's the thing. I'm wondering it's hard to compare, and if you can get both, it's better, but which out of reserve and draw will most serve the function that we think of as draw nowadays? Is it the ability to keep more cards after each round, or is it the ability to have more options but you might have to lose some because you couldn't play them on gold? Which of those is closer to card advantage as we see it now?
I think it changes over time, right? I think early game it's about holding cards, and later game it's about drawing them once you've depleted your hand. So I think you need both in your deck to be really effective, and if you only have one, you're only going to be effective in the either early or later stages of the game.
I think it also, you can build your deck around one or the other. So if you're not going to have a lot of reserve, but you're going to have a lot of card draw, then as the pool gets deeper, you can play a lot of low-cost events in your deck and things like that to try and empty your hand as you're drawing cards. So that's part of an interesting mechanic of reserve value, is as the card pool gets deeper, how can we, you know, spend our resources one way or the other and get best advantage?
And inversely, you could have a whole bunch of really beefy, huge monster characters that you hold in your hand and play 1 or 2 a turn. Because you have this huge reserve value. So you're playing, you know, this quality characters instead of these quantity characters.
I like that this Sam, he's similar to the old Sam in that he's really a factor in card advantage, but I like that he's not neutral. Neutral. It's nice not to have neutral. I mean, we would just have this in every single deck if it was neutral. So it's a good thing they restricted him to a house.
Well,
or to a faction, excuse me.
Another point. So Sam is loyal. The Messenger Raven we saw, which was draw, is loyal. In the Lords of Casterly Rock article, we saw Lannisport was loyal. These, and then Summer, who was giving insight, was loyal. It looks like every draw card we've seen so far has been loyal.
I think it's good what you mentioned, Alex. I think it's good that there's not, as far as we can tell right now, a lot of inter-house draw that you can just, oh, I will ally with this faction just to get the draw package. Like right now, when you use the conquest agenda in 1.0, the first thing I think is, oh, if I make this conquest, what can I conquest with to get a bunch of draw? Maybe Lanny, can I do this? You know, that's not really what it's meant to do.
But that's what it ends up doing. I agree totally.
Yeah, and I mean, think that maybe we've defined 1.0 so much by draw that if they continue this in 2.0, the house's identity might actually be defined by where their draw comes from. And we mentioned that because we had the insight keyword and we were discussing that with Florian. But if certain houses only ever have insight on characters that have intrigue icons, and certain houses like Stark only ever has insight on military icons, or Lannister only ever draws off of, you know, I don't know, plot reveal or winning dominance or who knows what it is, then you can create identity within the resource base.
How can you create identity within the resource base?
He's saying if a house has insight only on characters with intrigue, then that even if they don't only have intrigue icons, they're basically an intrigue house because you need the card advantage. So he's saying however the cards draw within the faction, then that becomes the identity of the faction. I think that's true. I think it's interesting, and it's a way they can really push the houses in one direction or another. You just print a card for Stark that says win Dom and draw cards. Well, now you're going to be trying to.
You're going to be the Dom house, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
This I understand, but you know, like from a resource perspective, I don't think that's true.
I say cards as a resource here. That's what.
Oh, okay.
Controlling your cards.
All right, then I understand what you're saying, Alex.
Now, some of the other Night's Watch stuff that we'd seen, we'd already spoiled the wall previously, so we figured there was going to be that sort of defensive theme of not losing out of post challenges. We'd already seen that, but I was pretty pleased with some of the design that I saw in the article, like that card of Sword in the Darkness. If you overcommit and win on defense, then you don't need to oppose further challenges because they can't make any.
Or the plot.
Yeah, actually the plot in the first cycle there, the one that says that the first challenge initiated against you is an automatic, well, or they can't win it, I guess.
It's going to be interesting to see with all these different factions. In 1.0, early on, they tried to say, this house will do this, this, and this. And then as we got into a cycle or two, it was like, well, maybe Stalwart, we don't want to keep up with that. We'll kind of stop doing that. So I wonder what will stick with each faction.
You know, location control, everyone can have that. We'll give Lannister the, you know,
Westerlands.
The Westerlands, yeah. And they can have location control too, and that's okay. I don't want to see that again. I hope we don't see that again.
I'm curious to see which faction-defining attributes they'll just drop because they don't work out quite like they thought.
To me, it's more about the faction-defining holes that they'll fill, because I think that was one of the biggest mistakes of 1.0, that they started to fill these huge holes that factions had. You know, Stark had this intrigue hole, but really, Stark decks nowadays have enough intrigue icons not to worry about it. Lannister couldn't control locations. Well, they can nowadays, so I'm hoping that we're not going to see that in 2.0 forever. That we won't, that each faction will be defined not only by its strengths, but by its weaknesses as well.
I'd say, yeah, I would hope primarily by its weaknesses. I'm okay with them saying something like, oh, we have Stalwart, oh, it turns out it didn't work, then we'll drop it. You right. know, we have Yoren and Take the Black as these take control effects. That winds up skewing the meta or messing things up, and they drop that as a future theme. That's fine for me. But yeah, if they start padding in weaknesses and saying, we didn't want every house to have location control, but now we kind of do, I think you lose more identity there, right? I think
we weren't planning that the Night Watch to have a good resource base, but we're just going to add that to them, so that weakness will go away, kind of thing.
Now, well, also, it's also going to depend. It just as you get so many cycles, eventually those holes become slightly more and more filled through mutual cards. Early on, they're always going to be more well defined early on, and then glossed over slightly more as we get into more cycles. So I'm sure for the first year or so, there'll be very well defined weaknesses, and it will be a lot of fun trying to build around them.
Well, it doesn't have to be, right? Like, if they're very careful with their neutral cards, especially since they can rotate out, as long as they don't put any of these hole fillers in box sets or the core set, we should be okay in theory to continue with the weaknesses ongoing.
Well, we need like minds in playtesting. We need some testers who will be vigilant.
There were also some – so I mentioned some cards that weren't in the spoiler, and I just wanted to point out that, for instance, Castle Black was spoiled by Team – or by 2C1C, the Old Forest Ranger and the Messenger Raven, if you haven't seen them yet, were spoiled by Team Covenant in their YouTube video. But I think that of all the 2.0 news, actually, the stuff, not surprisingly, that I was most excited about was the new Quill and Tankards regular 2 weeks ago, explaining some of the new rules. I know. but this was also the first time we got to see an answer to that question where everybody's wondering how you can play high gold characters. That article told us that we now have 8 gold for setup.
Which is ridiculous and cool.
Who knows how that will play? I mean, it's going to be interesting. We'll just have to get all the cards in our hand to see what the curves actually look like.
My first thought with the 8 gold in setup was actually, why is it not 7? 7 factions, 7 phases, 7 plots. Oh, no, we have 8 factions. Never mind. Okay, maybe that's what it is. But also, no, I mean, you tell your new player, okay, you draw up seven cards, and he goes, okay, I got that. And you look at your house card, and it tells you the seven faces. He goes, okay, I got that. And you can play cards. And he goes, oh, how much gold can I play? And he thinks, seven, obviously. And
yeah, that's a stretch, Alex.
I don't know that that was even the most interesting revelation from that article, though.
It was dupes being able to set up for me.
All the dupe stuff.
Yeah. Dupe stuff is big. The dupe stuff is big also from the gold curve standpoint, though, right? Because if you're going to run these big Tywin-like characters or Jon Snow and things like that, or at least early on, you're going to have to run dupes in the decks because you just won't have the card depth to do it. And now that you can set them up so they're actually helping your setup instead of hurting it.
And what else? They do other things as well, right? We know.
Can't be canceled.
Can't be canceled. That's huge.
Yeah, it's big.
Well, that depends. If burn really exists, it may not matter in the long term. In the short term, it certainly will. But if burn still exists, you know.
But for your big, strong guys, for like your strength six, whatever, for your big characters, the ones, I mean, they want this game to reflect to a certain extent the show. And if you can play your three Tywins and you can set up dupes and that save can't be canceled, now you have a real reason to skew your deck to include these named characters.
Yeah, and now you can throw all your attachments on that guy that's got the two dupes because he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, staple base for attachments actually makes quite a difference. You know, despite the fact that they're bouncing to hand and so on, you don't want to be repaying the cost every single phase and the like. So, I mean, that's the main reason why attachments are good in Lord of the Rings, for instance, because you always have a target for them. The target is staying on the board, and I think that makes a pretty big difference there. But all of this seems to make setups easier. Does it mean that you have to spend less time worrying about how your setup is good or not? Because
no.
You can use attachments, you can use everything but events, technically, even dupes.
Setup is draw. Cards. You always care about setup. I mean, we'll have to see what the curve is like, but the difference between a four card and a five card is that you draw an extra card. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. You'll still be putting it in the analyzers and figuring out setup, I think.
Yeah.
We'll get some of those Magic players in here. They'll build some real heavy-duty software. I'll be using it.
Yeah, that's,
you don't already have heavy duty software, Seth?
I mean, we have DC proprietary software. Okay. Me and Steve do coding on the weekends. We can't share it though. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Canada already has one too.
I see.
What? I am your software. You send me a deck and you say, "What are the chances I draw these two cards?"
No, and once I you gave you me the number. Stats for the hyperbolic, we're good now. We're solid.
Alex has an abacus by his computer. That's about the extent of your software.
Alex just sends us the math, and then once that's done, we just put it in.
Yeah, how to phrase this? I'm also wondering how we've seen plots, a lot of them around four gold, three gold, one five gold, I think so far, maybe two. And now we have an 8-gold setup. How does that difference compare to first edition, where generally our setup was about the average plot gold? What does that change overall?
I think it's a question we're going to have to wait to answer because we need to see what all the resource cards are like. We really need to know what your resource base, what is it going to look like, because that might offset the difference between the setup and the plots.
That's true. If a lot of it is gold generation, you don't get that on setup ever, and you don't get that on the turn you play it. So it's possible that a 5-gold plot, you'll typically have 8 gold on that turn.
And that would make sense, but we just don't know because we don't know how many characters are producing resources, gold. We don't know how many locations are reducing or producing resources. We just won't know until Gen Con. Or I guess before. A little before.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit before as we get the whole card pool. So they mentioned that the Barrow spoilers are coming by the time most of us will have listened to this, because they seem to be posting them earlier and earlier in the day. Anyone have any wild predictions?
We're going to see a Robert and a Renly.
We already squinted at the Robert from the back of the box, and now
maybe
I'm
a Melisandre.
He says intimidate. Yeah.
I hope that Barrow still focuses on the power icons, not necessarily rush, but just dominating the power challenge. I thought it was so thematic in first edition with how they work in the books.
Definitely deadly.
I think so. Yeah. But, you know, we haven't yet. So power challenges were historically the weakest, and they gained a little bit of value with prized. We haven't seen prized yet. So I'm hoping that we also see some, if that's the case, and I do hope it is, I hope we see some very important triggers off power challenges. Because we've weakened the power of intrigue challenges a little bit, but they were the best, so maybe they'll be on par with military. Maybe military will be a bit better. So you can change the relative value of that by what kind of easy triggers houses and neutral have. And I hope power is the one where you say, this is the one I want to do if I want to trigger that powerful effect as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be really cool. All they need to do is give them all insight, and then that's the most powerful effect you need. Give them
that's
all
right, insight on power challenges. There you go.
Your action insightful finding. Baratheons.
So, Little C, everyone on the boards have started to talk FAQ. They're saying that something should come out pre-Gen Con, you know, maybe 5-6 weeks ahead of time, but not come into effect until the actual Gen Con date. But what everyone's talking about is what's going to be in it. And I'm hoping they hit boats, and I know you are too, Little C.
Yeah, I'm actually, it makes me sad every time I see a regional result and Martell No Agenda wins. I'm like, why isn't anybody playing HOD Maiden's Vein? What are you guys doing? This is a cakewalk. But alas, people just, they love their Martell No Agenda. What can you say?
Yeah, there's a lot of Martell and it's not going away. So what do you think is going to be in an FAQ? If you had to make an FAQ yourself today, what would you do?
First thing, I would fix the boat decks. I think they don't even have to be the best deck in the meta. They're a bad influence because you can counter them with these plots, but these plots, you know, it limits your deck design space, and they're bad against other decks. So you clear out the warship decks. They're too well known. I think that's step one. Do you guys agree?
How would you do that?
Currently, I would say the biggest problem for qualification ratios for decks that are overrepresented is Greyjoy. A good portion of that is on the backs of the boats. Not entirely, though. And I think it's the one thing that stands out that you have to hit. No matter what happens in the FAQ, you know, my prediction is it comes out 3 weeks before Gen Con. My prediction is it hits boats. The other stuff, I think, is much more flexible.
So for hitting boats, we got to hit Bane and Naval Escort, in my opinion. We can't leave either of them, right? So we have a couple ways of doing that. We either have to go crazy on the restricted or restricting 3 or 4 different boats, like Refurbished Hulk, like, you know, Captured Cog, and probably another one, maybe Sail Galley that DC loves. All of that has to be restricted in order to hit boats, or we have to severely change the way boats work, whether that's, you know, limited response on Mains Bane, so that I know that doesn't work from a rules perspective, Alex. Right. I mean, but the idea is there, right? It can only be used once a round or something.
That's what those ignorant fellows on the other podcast said. That's not going to be enough. Just doing it once per round is plenty.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think
I agree with you.
The simplest solution is this and some other ones. I would ban cards. I would just say goodbye. Goodbye, Mira. Goodbye, Maiden's Bane. You know,
goodbye, Naval Escort. Yeah, I agree. Ban
Naval
it.
Escort.
Done. Oh,
yeah,
trust me, Naval Escort is just as much a problem as Bane. What do you think?
I think we'll get like a Nate ban, like a fake ban. We'll get like a, oh, you know, for Naval Escort, you only
discard it afterwards or something.
Yeah, something errata that's so crazy because they don't want a ban list. I think that's pretty clear. It'll just be an errata that's so heavy-handed that you only
count boats that have the word Bane in them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or to a maximum strength of 2 or something.
Yeah.
So that's step one. I think we all agree they'll take care of the boats. I trust Nate. I mean, he's not going to do a half job. He knows what to do. He'll take care of it for us.
Yeah.
Now, the next point is, okay, we've touched boats. That fixes the only problem that comes out of it. But we've had a card pool that we've known all of the cards since the last chapter pack release.
You got to do something about Martell and Starkin A. Come on now.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but I don't necessarily think that either of those decks are broken. I don't necessarily think that they're overrepresenting.
That's just
but
because
I think
you haven't played Stark NA recently.
Well, that's true. Actually, in this last weekend's regional results, it's been pretty crazy. But I think that it is also important to use the restricted list and the FAQ to make sure that the meta looks a little different at Gen Con. And just to shake things up, even if they're not necessarily broken. So I would go beyond just the Longships, you know, changes that we've talked about, and I would do something that makes you just reevaluate that. I mean, DC, you have a library of decks, I'm sure, that you think are ready for Gen Con. And I would like the FAQ to make you look at each of those decks slightly differently and wonder.
I disagree with you, Alex. I don't know if we'll get into this if we talk about regional results, but what we're seeing in regionals is right now people aren't copying each other's decks. and a lot of people are just going back to archetypes that have existed for a long time. I think Gen Con will already look very different from the regional season. Like, for example, Scrub No Agenda and Martell No Agenda have been winning a lot, but we have a Dragon Pit deck that we built and played in New York, and I will take that any day against those two decks. I would love for someone to flip Stark No Agenda or Martell No Agenda against
DC,
that Dragon.
DC sadly is not playing that in Gen Con, so anyway, Stark No Agenda will be safe.
I mean, if everybody's going to play Stark and Martell No Agenda, why not? But my point is that, you know, we won with this Bane deck. Different, you know, different regionals are being won by different decks, and it's not like infecting the meta. Like last year, the Warship decks really infected the meta, and they were everywhere last regional season after the Spanish Battle for the Wall.
Yeah.
And we really haven't seen that. So I'm not sure we need such a shakeup before Gen Con, because I think Gen Con will be the Wild West.
See, I don't agree with that, and so we won't go into too much. I would like a shakeup for shakeup's sake. I agree that I don't think it's needed. I don't think there will be a problem with the meta, but I think that you want to have people reevaluate the card pool on a regular basis by adding new cards to it, or, in this case, the only option we have, taking cards away from it. I think that that's an important part of the evolution of an LCG as well.
It's a tough job to do that, because if you're admitting that there's not a big balance issue in the meta right now, then when you start pulling cards off or putting cards on, you have the potential to make a balance issue. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's a tough job to go in between all six houses and adjust them. I mean, we feel like there's a pretty balanced meta other than these warships. So where do you start affecting things to keep it balanced?
There's a card that has come up in a couple of talks, and I wouldn't say all of these necessarily, but for instance,
Mira, the Red Viper.
Well, yeah, Mira, Red Viper, Harrenhal, for instance, Sam, Summoned by the Conclave. These are potential things that you could use to tweak the meta without grossly imbalancing houses. So Summoned by the Conclave, for instance, is a pretty good example. I could take that off, and I'm fairly certain it doesn't change the relative balance of too many houses, but it does change the game a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I can see
that could be an interesting choice.
Shifts the No Agenda decks pretty substantially, right?
Does that make you want to play Summoned more or less if it becomes restricted? Because if I play a No Agenda and I pick Summoned as my restricted, I'm pretty sure if I sit down, you know, it makes me think, okay, there won't be that many other No Agenda decks. They've just been hit.
But the losing Summoned does not cripple any of these No Agenda decks. It really doesn't. They're not dependent on Summoned. They can play mirror matches and not lose, right? Well, half the time, whatever the case is. I think that you can still play No Agenda without it. I don't think you would wind up choosing it as your restricted very often, but I think it does just enough to say, okay, you'll see slightly less Quentin, which is a deck that people, you know, have seen quite a lot.
Are tired of, yeah.
So you'll see Mira hit the board slightly less often. She'll still be in all the same decks, but she'll hit the board slightly less often.
But she might go up to three of instead of two of now, Alex.
Yeah, well, fine. But I think that increases the variance in those matchups just a little bit, just enough to make you rethink what the meta is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing could be said for if you banned Harrenhal, for instance. It would not drastically change the power balance between houses, but it would do just enough to make you think, hold on, can I build a Hollow Hill out of Martell again? Can I do this? Can I bring Hatchling's Feast back? And I think that's the kind of questions you want to get people to ask.
Well, it's interesting. You're talking about these meta shakeups. If we were trying to shake up the meta, what would we do? What would you do, Little C, to shake up the meta right now?
So I would keep Harrenhal just like it is for other reasons, just because I think it has a positive effect on the game. Mm-hmm. But I think the house that is the most stale right now is Martell, because Martell has this really obvious strong build. Everybody knows it, that you can change a couple cards, but it's really the same thing, and everybody can play it. So Martell would be my target. If I wanted to shake things up, I would try and break up that No Agenda one way or the other, and maybe pull something off, just mix it up a little bit. I think there are some targets to take off in Martell. Sivas, maybe. I think the Orphan is a really good card, but it's not a game-breaking card. Like, you know, it's not an NPE-type card. On the other hand, the strength of the No Agenda decks are Quentin, the Viper, and Gaston.
Yeah. You see, a couple of those. Yeah.
Hit two of those, and you have to build a different kind of Martell deck.
Yeah, I would be happy with seeing Gaston and the Viper go on together. I mean, Quentin is fine. I don't really if someone goes as well, it reduces that.
Yeah, but, Quentin's he didn't even do anything in that deck. How many times do you draw a card off Quentin? I never draw off Quentin. It doesn't matter.
I mean, there are some other cards though that I would like to see and that might affect card balance. And one example of that is Harry the River Runes. I would not shed a tear for that card if it hit the restrict.
Well, they're strong. They could survive without that.
4 months ago, I said restrict Harry, and Alex, you were one of the people who said, no, why would we restrict this card?
Yeah, I reserve the right to have been wrong at any time. It just happened to be right now. That's all that matters.
So you admitted to being wrong, and Little C was right earlier.
No. I was right then. Things have changed. I'm right now.
Okay. I see. Yeah. So the rest of the world's caught up to Little C, is what you're saying.
Well, there we go. That's right, yeah.
Okay.
He was just prescient, right?
I think Harry, it's really inconsequential if you restrict Harry. It doesn't bother me either way. I mean, you can...
Yeah, it's not going to change all that much. I would be happy to see something like a House Divided come back, because that was a more interesting meta decision. It affected certain houses differently than others. It could affect your play and inform your play more than Harry the Riverlands did.
Which is just good all around, all the time.
Yeah.
I hate to say this because I might get in trouble later, but how do we feel about House of Dreams? There's a lot of House of Dreams going around right now.
There is.
But they're unique. At least, like, every given house
is
different.
Well, not the draw ones, though. Thunderer and Doran Solar and Mander are almost identical.
I guess that's true.
But, yeah, Dragon Pit's very different from Maiden's Bane, which is very different from... Bear Island, for instance. All of those are very, very different decks.
You could affect those House of Dream locations in different ways, though. You don't have to actually like put House of Dreams on the restricted list to hurt them. You could just take stuff off the restricted list to hurt them.
Well, there are a couple of things. This Search is one that I would team. Do from a rule standpoint. I want them to reverse the ruling on, or to change the wording on House of Dreams just so that it works slightly different within the tournament structure, so that either you have to pick your House of Dreams location as part of your deck choice, or that you get to pick it slightly later, and so you're not cheating if you see what your opponent has.
That doesn't do anything. Dragon Pit.
It
would do something for Bear Island, right? Because you'd be forced to play it every game, even when you ran the Stark.
But that's not a balance fix. This is just I don't like people inadvertently or deliberately cheating for whatever the reason is.
I think what you do with House of Dreams, you either restrict the card itself or you leave it the way it is. I think taking Search and Detain off is a really bad idea for a lot of reasons. One, it makes House of Dreams basically completely unplayable, which is not what you want to do. If you restrict it, it's not necessarily unplayable. But if you know that, like, three of your games, tons of people will play Search and Detain, you just never play the agenda. And I don't think that's what we want.
I've heard that Search and Detain thing as well. I think that's a huge mistake to let it come off the restricted list. It is a far better plot than people who don't play it often realize.
Oh,
here's the thing.
Dale, I'll play Dale. Here's the bounce in my hand.
You guys are both saying this, but you're both excellent players. And I think Search and Detain actually favors the excellent players. So I like cards that give advantage to good players.
I don't like an auto-included plot.
Bad players auto-included, they do it wrong, so I'm okay with that, too.
Nah. And also, the initiative game is already fairly meaningful right now.
John wants that joust win. He wants the outright win. He wants Search and Detain back.
I would like to see that stay on the restrictions.
One thing they mentioned on the other podcast was pulling the errata from Hollow Hill. And which is very relevant because then you can play Rally Cry in Hollow Hill very easily. I think this is dangerous because it almost bans if you make good Hollow Hill decks, you basically don't play House of Dreams because you know plot two or plot three, your House of Dreams location is toast every time. But
that's interesting because I'm not sure it increases the prevalence of Rally Cry. People are playing a lot of Rally Cry right now already. And I think that by removing the errata, you make Rally Cry unplayable outside of Hollow Hill. I'm not necessarily opposed to removing the errata. I actually quite like it because I hate the errata, but also because it brings back things like Shadow Killer, which were kind of fun things to have in that old version of the Bear of Hollow Hill. But I don't know what it does for Rally Cry. I'm not sure it changes the overall meta construction of Rally Cry.
The difference is, though, when you play Rally Cry in Hollow Hill, you know you can get it off. If there's no errata. when you play Rallycry in another deck, like I have Dragon Pit, I can Harpy Scourge my cards. We can play all kinds of games to keep me below you so you can't Rallycry my pit. That's a big difference. But if you have it in Hollow Hill, it's going to be very difficult for me to stop you from hitting my pit.
Yeah, unless you're Clansman or someone with Harpy Scourge, it's way harder to make sure you're going
to
get the Rallycry.
To be fair, your pit is less useful against Hollow Hill.
It depends on what Hollow Hill. I mean, yeah, but my point is just that when you have Hollow Hill, Rallycry in Hollow Hill becomes just, it almost automatically goes off.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it'd be interesting to remove the Errata from Hollow Hill. I think you have to think very carefully about what you want. If you want those decks to have the Rallycry for Heron Hall, where does that put us with these Hollow Hill decks? It's a big boost to know that plot two, I'm hitting Heron Hall if they play it. And plot one, they probably won't play their Heron Hall. It really changes the way Hollow Hill works.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that that's inherently a bad thing. I mean, we've seen some Hollow Hill, actually. There was a Hollow Hill win this weekend, a Targ Hollow Hill. Targ Hollow Hill made top four in Montreal. So it has some potential. I don't think those versions really care that much about the cards at your commands. Bera cared more about it historically. I don't know.
Shadow Killer coming out.
I would like to see that card come back into some sort of play. But anyway, yeah. I guess I could go either way on that. I think you lose something on the Rallycry because it becomes an auto-include in Hollow Hill, but you can't include it anywhere else. Well, right now it's a little more variable, but I don't think it changes the total number of Rallycries in the meta.
I think probably we were all agreeing Warships, something needs to happen. The next easiest place to go after is Martell. Do something about the No Agenda Gaston package. Maybe hit Gaston and the Viper together. Maybe pull something else off. And
maybe
then from
Quentin
there,
and Gaston. That'll work too.
Quentin and Gaston, that would be, you'd push people in a different direction. And then from there, it gets a bit murkier.
The next one on my list would be Stark to look at. I mean, I mentioned Harry for Lannister, but that's not really a huge change to their decks. It's just so
Stark is so much better than people think.
Stark. The problem with Stark, though, is it's so hard to do something specific to them. They're not relying on a single linchpin right now.
You can
get rid of No Quarter, and I'm not sure that Stark would suffer as much as it used to, you know?
No, it wouldn't. I mean, with Northern Patriarch, they're the ultimate counter for 2-2-2 decks. And with all this ability to... Basically, they have no bad matchup, right? There isn't a bad matchup other than maybe Pit.
Lanny.
No.
I think Stark
not
anymore. So wow, Lanny decks.
Really? I don't think so. The new Stark plays so much Shadows with extra stand that it's not an issue.
What extra stand? What do you mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the stand. I think that you could build a...
They're running still Shadow stand. When a card comes out of Shadow, they stand. Then they use Mira, and on top of that, they're using To Be a Wolf.
To Be a Wolf, that's true.
I think there's a lot of stand in Stark now.
I think the problem is still Mira. But
yeah, Mira is... you're right. If they banned Mira, Stark would be balanced.
I don't think Stark is unbalanced right now. Stark is not that good.
You're playing the wrong Stark stuff.
Every regional this weekend.
Yeah, you're playing the wrong Stark. They're awesome.
Just build Bruno's deck, open the 5/5/1, start Neil and Bros, and see what happens. You'll be fine. I think it's pretty presumptive to do something to Stark. It's not like nobody... Are people really complaining right now like Stark is overpowered?
Yes.
Just one people is complaining? Is that
no,
you, John?
There's at least seven people.
You and all the people you're building with who get loose to your Stark decks, your secret
maybe.
Stark decks?
That might be it.
Stark, yeah, but again, I think there's nothing you can do about it that isn't widespread or banning Mira or errating the shit out of her. And I don't think they're going to rattle the shit out of her, and I don't think they're going to ban her, so I don't think there's much that... You could pick any two cards out of Stark, and I don't think you change the deck all that much.
I agree. You need to do something with Mira to fix Stark.
Surprisingly, we seem to agree on most of these things, just not necessarily the finer two.
Let's if we can quickly say, do we think anything for Greyjoy and Bera and Targ? Are those houses, are we happy with them, or should anything be done?
I'm definitely happy with Greyjoy.
But if we get rid of the boats.
Yeah, boats.
I mean, I still think Live 2 is a really strong deck, but I think there are decks that it auto-loses against.
Like anything Lannister?
that's part of it, and I still think it does pretty badly against Mel's favor. Vera's underperforming. I still don't like the fact that it's basically dependent on Mel's favor, but I don't think it's a problem. Targ is closer to the limit, but I don't know. What are they going to do to Targ?
I'm happy with Vera. I'm happy with Greyjoy. I think Vera's really interesting. There's so many decks to build. You want to build knights, do shadows, whatever. Vera's fine. There's a lot to explore. Yeah.
Which version of Mel's favor do you want to build, basically? Very interesting question.
Hey, my favorite Vera doesn't have Mel's favor, Alex, just for the record.
Does it win any games?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Alex, you sound a little sore about Mel's favor. Something happened recently, maybe? Like online, a video? Well, I don't know.
If I was on YouTube and go to Rob's website, would I see you losing to Mel's favor, Alex?
You would indeed.
Back to the FAQ, there is a big question, which is, do we leave Targ or do we try and go after it? The big combo in Targ is Danny and to be.
To be a dragon.
Do we leave it or do we...
Is it really a problem?
If I were to address it, and this is actually not my idea at all, and this is someone else's because I was just in New York and Dave Stroms, who knows his Targ, mentioned it. He said, yeah, you could restrict to be a dragon, and that would do it, obviously, but it would probably be more interesting to restrict King's Landing Coup. And I think I agree with
him. I agree.
I think it would be more interesting and affect fewer different ways, and you still get to pick a power struggle. You're just going to generally be playing a bad plot on your first turn, you know.
Yeah, what are the other power struggles? What would we be playing? 601? What else?
601 or
4-1
Lineage and Legacy, or 2-1-1 Waste Their Time.
It's really just a question. I think that's a better solution because it's more mild, and I just don't think that to be a dragon, Danny, it's not like it dominated tournaments in the regional
season. It's not. Yeah, this is it.
No, but I would like that because I don't like it when I know what my opponent's first plot is every single time. I find that makes the game slightly less interesting. And if I'm against a Targ, I'm going to see King's Landing Coup. And there's no doubt in my mind that there are some situations in which they won't seed it as their first plot because of some other gamble or some good play. But,
description, some other gamble.
No, I mean, I've played matches against people who were running that plot but didn't use it first, like Dave Stroms at Worlds last year, because he had to win initiative on that first turn, and he didn't have any 2B-of-Dragons in hand. There are some things that change that.
I think we're all advocating pretty mild changes for Gen Con, what we've been discussing now, but I think we will all feel the opposite after Gen Con. We want something new, fresh, and very exciting.
Oh, yeah.
For
monstrous world changes. You know, ban something, ban a bunch, ban Mira, ban Gaston Grey, ban I don't know what from Greyjoy, poor Greyjoy.
So our message would be, do what you gotta do, but keep the gloves on for Gen Con, and then take them off.
Restrict Valor, restrict the Aftermath. Like, just do something major after Gen Con.
Yeah, I can get behind that. I don't know about restricting Valor. That sort of scares me. But, hey, if 2.0 won't have a Valor, we should get used to it. Yeah?
Could you imagine if they just said Valor's restricted?
I'd just stop playing a lot of restricted cards. I'd start playing Valor as my restricted.
Yeah, it might just be that.
Well, it would just change the meta as we know it. But you could find other cards that would do the same thing, that would shape it hugely, like just change it. What you were saying earlier, Little C, was we don't want to worry about breaking the nice balance, but you know what? I don't mind breaking the balance for one last go at Worlds and Challenge.
I agree with you. Let's see. It would be an interesting conversation to return to after Gen Con. Before Gen Con, I think you keep the gloves on.
Hey, after the super secret DC deck comes out on Gen Con, we're definitely going to want to restrict all the pieces.
Dragon Pit. We're all playing Dragon.
Of course. Okay. You heard it here first. They're definitely not playing Dragon Pit.
Yeah. Train for Dragon Pit, everyone. Make sure you can beat it so DC doesn't play it.
All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Seth. Closing comments. Well, I guess I'll go over the regionals for this coming weekend. That's the weekend of the 27th and 28th of June. There's a Thunder Bay regional in Canada. There's the Copenhagen regional in Denmark, the Genova in Italy, the Distrito Federal regional in Mexico. There's one in California as well. Then there's an Austin, Texas, and a Schofield, Wisconsin in the States. So actually a fair few North American, depending on what you count Mexico as. Do you have any other closing comments?
I do not.
You're just giving me nothing. Nothing.
I know, I'm not very useful.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
So I can see your point there, Seth. I mean, little C.
Gotcha. We almost had it. Now, I have to ask, what makes this one an episode instead of an episode?
I don't know what you're talking about, Alex.